Welcome to Not a Quinn, a doctor lady.
Not a Quinn?
Welcome to Not a Lady.
I
don't even remember our intro. Hello and welcome to this episode of Not a Lady, a Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman podcast. My name is Sarah.
And I'm Kelly.
And this is episode 8 of season 2, titled Giving Thanks.
And we're coming to you live from the South Pacific.
Together, in really creaky chairs. We are actually sitting not beside the ocean, but the ocean is right outside the door where we're staying. So
there may be some background noise.
There will be background noise. It's going to test my post-production skills.
Ability. But we haven't really recorded together in the same place since...
Episode 1.
Yeah.
We did our Looking Forward to Not a Lady podcast together. Mm-hmm. And then we did the pilot together. Maybe we did the epidemic?
Recap or something? I can't remember. It's been a long time.
Oh, but speaking of why we haven't had an episode in a while, not that we need an excuse, because this is a hobby, sister bonding, but I feel like we have a lot of faithful listeners.
Who are like, where you been? Did you die?
I wanted to tell you guys, we have really exciting news. Basically, the reason we haven't really been recording is because Kelly has an official PA at the end of her name now. She graduated. She passed all her exams. Then she went on to pass the boards. And I don't really know what any of that means, but basically, she's got a big girl job now, and she's working in a real hospital in trauma surgery, and
praise God. I have not started yet, which is why I'm able to come here and take this wonderful, needed vacation. Yeah, my medical license has been approved to practice. I'll be starting my career in trauma surgery pretty much as soon as I get back. I'll be making a big move. So, yes, thank you guys for your patience, but there was just a lot going on there at the end. A lot. And so I'm happy to be done with all of that studying and such.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now we can take out of our trailer.
Student.
The part where you say,
you just put, yeah. Physician, assistant.
We have a few quick lessons from where the heart is. We released 2 episodes for parts 1 and 2. And one of the lessons was related to our conversation about Sully's statement to Brian that candy is candy. Julie sent us an email saying, I took that statement as, candy is a fleeting pleasure that you can enjoy anywhere, but it won't satisfy you in the long term, both literally and metaphorically. And that's not a bad lesson either.
To me, the sweet tooth, the sugar addict. Don't tell me that, Julie. On Instagram, Michaela Quinn Medicine Woman says, I think Sully grew up in this episode. The fear of losing Michaela pushed him to his limits, but at the same time, even if he makes efforts to blend into Boston society, he still stays true to himself, which is true.
Also a write-in on Instagram from Totally Nicole. She wrote, you guys were having a conversation about this episode being largely people talking about Mike and how she feels, rather than her telling them and the audience. And I think there could be purpose for this. Probably just overthinking, but like you guys said, that's why we have a podcast. Mike is always straightforward and opinionated about what she knows and feels to be true, but her love for Sully is unclear to her. That is the one thing she is unsure of. I think the audience is meant to be guessing just as much as she is, so we go on this journey with her as she figures it out. It's frustrating to the other characters and the audience, as I'm sure it's frustrating to Mike to not understand her feelings because she is always so sure of things. I think that's a really good analysis, because I remember that was one of my frustrations with those episodes, is I'm like, I want people to stop talking about how Dr. Mike's feeling, and I want her to just tell us,
right.
But I think that's a really good point, is that's part of the journey for Dr. Mike, is she's not sure, and it's part of the journey for us. We're not sure either. We're not sure why she likes Dr. Burke, or why she thinks maybe marrying him would be a better decision for her. So, yeah.
Subfishfish on Instagram also just had a comment. They state, maybe Beth Sullivan showed the scene with Sully in the graveyard at Abigail's grave so that Michaela couldn't be sure how he felt about her and if he was really ready for a new relationship. That's the only way I can explain why Michaela believed in some situations that she could love William Burke. because actually, I think her heart should have told her long ago that she loves Sully. So she can't love Burke at all. But maybe her head told her it would be reasonable to marry William Burke, and it took her a little while to get her heart over her head. Maybe she was a bit afraid of Sully's open and direct way. Furthermore, she is not very experienced in the matters of love.
That's your opinion too,
which
right?
Which is true, yeah.
Yeah, because I think we kind of are going to talk about that in this episode as well. So thank you guys all for writing in. We really appreciate your thoughts on our double episode. But now we're going to talk about
episode 8, Giving Thanks.
Giving Thanks in July. We also watched this episode together, which was a thing we haven't done in a while.
It was funny, actually. Because then it was like all the parts we talk about cringing or laughing at or like we were doing at the same time.
Yeah. So do you want to start with the opening scene or would you like me to do it?
Aren't you going to give your details?
Oh, yeah. I really don't remember
Clearly
how to
we
do
haven't
this.
Done this in a while.
Season 2, Episode 8, Giving Thanks, aired on the 27th of November, 1993. It was directed by Michelle Lee and the writers were Tony Perling and Beth Sullivan.
So it premiered around Thanksgiving. How appropriate.
That's probably, I do think this one's also out of order, but that's probably why they picked it. They were like, yo, Thanksgiving Saturday.
That's what they said.
In 93, some guy was like, yo, guys, we need to put the Thanksgiving episode near Thanksgiving.
But it kind of makes sense because it kind of picks off right when they got back from Boston.
No, that's true. The opening scene is right after Boston. They arriving back in Colorado Springs from Boston. I guess I'm just thinking, and we'll probably talk about it more. Jake in this episode is not a Jake that we expect to see post the incident.
I think Jake
doesn't ever learn any lesson.
Yeah, I think that's maybe his character type.
But as stated, we start this episode with the family riding back to the homestead with Sully.
I wrote whole fam and soul because that's my nickname. And Dr. Mike is very glad to be home. And of course, there's some awkward staring that ensues between Dr. Mike and Sully.
Staring. Of like,
what's going on?
Their loving looks. Yeah. You just kissed in front of the whole town.
Gross. Okay, so then we discover that they have two missing chickens. The pumpkins didn't come up. And Sully explains that there's been no rain for 5 weeks. And so the well water is very, very low.
I do have a question. If no one knew they were coming, how did Sully have
their
wagon?
I don't understand. They had to know they were coming. Like, they made the whole big scene like he's just in town at the right place at the right time because that's what he does. But I'm sure Horace was like, oh, guess who's coming on the stagecoach? And then Sully's like, let me get the wagon and bring it back so I can take them home. Or they left it parked at the in town somewhere. I don't know.
Maybe with their horse. Robert E. had the horses. Okay, maybe. That's logical. You have logically
explained
away my question. I like in this scene that the kids straight up confront them about their feelings. Like, are you guys gonna get married now?
You do love each other, right?
Yeah.
You'll be courting?
And they're just like
wanna stay for dinner?
Do you wanna stay forever? The next scene goes into Sully and Dr. Mike unpacking, and they're super awkward.
Yeah. And Matthew wants to go see Ingrid, and Dr. Mike's like, seriously? And then Sully's like, it's hard to be apart from someone you love. I'm pretty sure we both looked at each other. We're like, cringe.
It's interesting because Dr. Mike, just like in Boston, she doesn't really know how to act around Sully. It seems like she's a little bit intimidated. She's stalling. She's distracted. Oh, tea? Oh, wait, we don't have any water. And he just wants to spend time together and show her everything in his world.
You only saw what I wanted you to see.
Right.
Now I want to show you everything.
So he takes her where to find herbs. They look at foxgloves. We've talked about foxgloves previously and their role in digitalis, which we now use as digoxin.
Even the dandelions that are for liver detoxifying tea, which is important because that shows that he did listen to her lecture in Boston.
Yeah.
Which he obviously confirms, which I'm like, did she really think he was going to come to that boring meeting and not listen?
I might have not listened.
But Mike makes a wish on the dandelion and then they have their little DTR conversation.
You and your DTR. Which basically comes down to what courting is to each of them. Because obviously they have both courted before. But Dr. Mike was courting in the city.
A long time ago.
Rude.
I'm just saying, she's a little out of practice.
And Sully obviously was courting when he was a minor, shopkeeper's daughter. So Dr. Mike talks about how they should be talking about each other's, finding out about each other's interests, and he should give her gifts, and...
I think it's really superficial. It annoyed me. To me, that's not courting. That should happen, like, before courting. Like,
yeah.
I just feel like it's a little superficial. Like, give each other things and find out what they like and understand their common interests. Like I feel like they've already done that at this point, have they not?
They definitely have mutual likes and dislikes. And they... Well, and they do... This episode will be about the not mutual ones.
And they bring each other things and they talk.
Yeah, remember when he brought you a shingle and a turkey for Christmas?
And they've already... The whole seeing if they're compatible part is probably like the, I love you, you love me, now what do we do?
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess it just... It's a different time and era, and I'm not saying that she's incorrect for that reasoning, but it seemed a little like, really? That's it? That's all?
But maybe her understanding of courting is also based on the kind of city perspective of it. You know, what they would say, like, civilized being.
She's been in Boston too long, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. In 1858, Theocrates published a book titled The Dictionary of Love. And in that book, which maybe Dr. Mike read when she was younger, or her mother read, or her sisters read, courting is defined as the period that is, quote, all romance, excitement, hope, desire, expectation, and sweet dreams, end quote. I feel like her understanding kind of fits with that. But, like you said, they're kind of past that point.
Meanwhile, Matthew, who has gotten a haircut,
yeah,
praise the Lord,
funny.
explains to Ingrid that Mike and Sully are now courting.
She asks him to reenact what he said.
Also cringy. Not surprising for them, but...
Super.
Yeah, Matthew basically tells Ingrid he loves her. Colleen and Brian are watching from the window. Then, more importantly, Ingrid explains that they're, you know, she may not be able to stay because they're having a lot of trouble finding food. So we're seeing this reoccurring theme about this drought and how it's affecting all members of the town at this point. Which kind of carries over into the next scene. the mercantile. Dorothy, Grace, Lauren are all complaining about the drought and the crops. Once again, we have Brian telling Lauren about the confectionery in Boston. Although it doesn't seem to be a problem because he still loves Mr. Bray's candy.
Candy's candy. Isn't that what Sully told him?
Mm-hmm.
The next scene actually is very interesting. Dr. Mike and Sully like to talk about their relationship in metaphor. And there was an episode, I don't even, was in season one or maybe it was early this season. We were like, what is this conversation about? And we had like multiple write-ins of people being like,
you're dumb.
It's code. They're talking about themselves. So now I'm like, okay, I need to pay more attention. Obviously, the writers of Dr. Quinn like to code their relationship, their, what is it, DTR conversations. Anyway, so they're kind of hunting, they're tracking. Sully's showing Dr. Mike how to track, and they have this long metaphor about lone turkeys actually behave in a similar manner to lone wolves. And Sully describes them as hard to catch. They love to be in nature, away from the flock. They're a prize because of the challenge. And he says something about them. They go around strutting, so showing their stuff. And they like to have solitary time to think. And that conversation ends with Sully saying, I don't want to go to the town meeting and be around people, which, relatable.
No, my favorite part is when he's like, hens don't think as much, but they really ought to. Which is funny because usually I would think women overthink things.
Well, so this is interesting. So I did some research actually on lone wolves, the difference between lone wolves and lone turkeys, because this is obviously a big part of their metaphor. The fact is wolves and turkeys, wolves are pack animals, turkeys are, there's that phrase, what, birds of a feather flock together. Like both of these species of animals are relationship-based, they're community-based. So a lone wolf, and it's actually the same for turkeys, isn't necessarily always male. There are lone wolves and turkeys that are male or female, which when I looked at the description, I went on this wolf behavior website. We view lone wolves as the rugged individualist, uncompromising, independent, driven to forge his own path, unfettered by a sentimental need for companionship. And it's like, whoa. And it's like, yeah, that's what Sully kind of sees himself as. However, few people or animals want to live this way in the long term. So often, lone wolves or lone turkeys, male or female, could be searching for new homes. They could be searching for a new pack or a new mate. And actually, for the population, it's actually really important to have lone wolves leave one pack and go to another, because that's how you keep the genetics healthy, right? Because you don't, if wolves are only ever breeding within their single pack, then the gene pool would start to get very small. So the reason you see male turkeys more often might be because there's competition and an alpha male will push out a younger male. So that's why he'll be on his own. But when he's on his own, he's looking for a mate or he's looking for a new flock to move to. But there were two reasons why a female turkey might be on her own. One, she could be in mourning. This is what it said. Also, females will kind of go alone to lay their eggs or have their babies to protect them from predators. But yeah, it doesn't always have to be male, Sully. So I agree with you. Women need their own solitary time, but I get what he's saying. He's trying to introduce her to the transition that he's talked to Cloud Dancing about multiple times, but
yeah,
not really her.
To try and understand him better.
Yeah.
She's mostly focused on making sure he comes to the town meeting, which they have concerning the Thanksgiving meal. And it's quite obvious when Mike and Sully come in that everyone's talking about them. All of them have something to say, right? Jake's like, she needs someone more stable. Why, I did all the doctoring while she was away. And Hank's like, she needs to be lit and I got the match. And we're just like,
shut up.
Like, we've already had this episode. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And the Reverend, weirdly enough, looks surprised and sad as well. Nonetheless, the Reverend prays, and there is a moment where Dr. Mike notices that Sully does not bow his head or close his eyes during this. And the meeting ensues, which basically is everyone fighting about prices. There's no extra food to spare. How are we going to have a meal when nobody wants to share? There's nothing to share.
We're going to start to feel like it's a flashback to the epidemic when things get scarce, people panic, and they take it out on each other. After the meeting, Dr. Mike and Sully are walking, and actually Sully is taking her to see where he lives, his little lean-to, one of the places he lives. And they're discussing drought. It's obvious Dr. Mike has never experienced this level of drought before. And Sully's kind of giving his perspective on the Cheyenne attitudes towards drought, which I actually found a couple of PowerPoints on modern day plans for handling drought. So there's, of course, conserving water, strengthening food sovereignty, preventing wildfires, and planting drought-resistant crops, which will come into play in a bit. But I did find this one article on drought in the 19th century. So I'll just read from it because I think it's a really helpful perspective on what people faced when it came to drought. Plains inhabitants face a complex and highly variable environment featuring periods of wet weather and periods of drought. People of the plains endured hostile weather phenomena such as tornadoes, blizzards, floods, hailstorms, dust storms, and the constant wind. The short-lived tornado or the hailstorm both pose less of a threat than the most serious weather hazard on the plains, drought. The plains has episodic recurrent drought, meaning people can experience plenty of rain for a period of time, but drought will always return. Early government surveyors Zebulon Pike and Stephen H. Long traveled through the region during a time of drought in the early 19th century and called it the Great American Desert. Their description of the area as a wasteland illustrates the impact of drought on the plains environment. A few years of above average or below average precipitation might make a good or bad condition appear to be permanent. migrants face contradiction between this challenging and unpredictable environment and the region's promise of independence and profit. This also plays into, I wonder if they would really be feeling the drought necessarily in just 5 weeks. I know they said it's been a couple months that it hasn't rained, but obviously we're looking at the significant changes happening while Dr. Mike was in Boston. So I'm not sure about the timeline, but it is definitely the fear and the impact it has on all life, as we will see in this episode, is very accurate. Sully wants to build a house there.
Yeah, he shows her where he lives. One of his places is kind of like a lean-to. Said he's always wanted to build a house there. Of course, Dr. Mike's like, I could never live so far from town. And they kind of have a disagreement where Sully's like, you said the same thing about the homestead for Abigail. And isn't this what we're supposed to do? Talk about these things? And then it kind of ends with, do we have enough in common? Dun, 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 dun.
Dramatic. And she also does hint at her and David. The most they had in common was they would work together at the hospital. So they always had lots to talk about.
Not sure it's great to compare. But also, like, I don't know. She's really stuck on that idea of, like, we need to have all this stuff in common.
Mm.
When I think that's why it kind of works, because they don't have a lot in common.
You mentioned she's coming right out of Boston. And so she knows what she's giving up to be with him. And so maybe it comes down to her being like, is it worth it? Yeah,
I don't know. Is so contradictory, because she spends the whole episode, at least one of that two-part episode, talking about how awesome Colorado Springs is and she wants to be there and she loves it. And anyway.
Yeah, but Colorado Springs, if she wanted to, she could walk away and leave behind, you know? But I think a relationship, it's not quite the same. You shouldn't just walk away and leave if you've made a commitment to someone. So I think that's probably, she's questioning, is this really strong enough to be forever? I can kind of see it. The way that she's questioning it probably isn't the healthiest for her newly budding relationship.
Dr. Mike then is with Matthew walking to town together when they see quite a commotion, which is Horace with his divining rod for dousing for water. In which he states the Bings have been doing for generations. He's basically following this, like, stick
to why
around like it's a Ouija board. And until he says, here, dig here, which is quite humorous, but apparently this was a real thing, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So the divining rod, or as you called it, water dowsing, it also has been called doodle bugging. People who use the divining rod sometimes were called dowsers. Sometimes we're called water witches, which I kind of love the idea of being like, hey, Horace.
The water witch.
The water witch. The earliest example that we have found of it being used as a tool for finding water dates back to a piece of cave art in northern Africa, dated thousands of years old. It's been around for a long time, and yeah, some people are like, this doesn't exist. People get lucky, or people are just good at knowing where groundwater is, but there are a lot of people who really do believe in it, and obviously if you're desperate enough, I think you'll hold on to the hope of anything. So this is the direction that the townsfolk are headed, so they all start digging.
Our next scene takes us to the Cheyenne village, where we see that they have lots of corn and crops, more specifically, mata, which is like corn.
Prickly pear?
I think they show the prickly pear, but the other thing is kind of like corn. I don't know. But basically, cloud dancing is explained that it doesn't need a lot of water to grow. And Dr. Mike is there, and she is really adamant about cloud dancing coming to town and teaching the townsfolk
how to plant drought-resistant crop.
Yeah. Is Sully there? I can't remember.
He is, and he's not into it.
His point is, why leave the reservation and risk it for the townspeople who usually aren't very receptive?
Yeah. Dr. Mike's point is, it's Thanksgiving, and the Indians helped the pilgrims, and we gotta pause. Hopefully most people know this by now, but I'm assuming some people don't. What we were told as children about what the first Thanksgiving is pretty much wrong. You know, the pilgrims. What boat did the pilgrims come over on?
The Mayflower.
Good job. And do you remember where they landed?
Plymouth Rock.
Yeah, Plymouth Plantation or Plymouth Colony. Good. William Bradford was their first governor. So when I taught in America, I taught American history, and in the textbook that we studied from, we studied some of William Bradford's writings about their start. Now, everybody knows a bunch of pilgrims died, like 1620, 1630, when they first arrived, because they couldn't survive. They didn't know how to survive off the land. The land was very sandy, and they just were struggling. They also came with disease. And by the time when we're going to label the first Thanksgiving sort of happened, 9 out of 10 of the indigenous people in the area had been wiped out by the plague. So the indigenous people were themselves becoming very desperate, because with the Mayflower came pilgrims and plague. The Pokanoket, they befriended the pilgrims because it was in the tribe's best interest to be able to trade with them. And they were willing to teach the pilgrims how to plant in this type of environment and climate that the pilgrims were not used to. But their teaching came for a price. The Pokanoket, they're like a subdivision of the Wampanoag tribe, but they had a rival tribe, and the pilgrims had weapons. They had weapons that the indigenous people knew that their weapons struggled against. And so they made a bargain. The indigenous people would keep helping the pilgrims if they helped them defeat this rival tribe. Now, the pilgrims aren't soldiers, but they did have to fight to survive. And so William Bradford wrote that they took 14 men at night to the village of this rival tribe, that the captain gave orders, let none pass, and they basically committed genocide on this whole tribe. And there's quite a good History Channel series called America, The Story of Us, and season 1, episode 1 actually talks a lot about this, because after they had wiped out the tribe, it's said that they celebrated with a feast, or they just celebrated. We don't know what feast looked like back then. However, William Bradford wasn't the only one who wrote about this happening on multiple occasions, where pilgrims and natives would go out against a tribe and then celebrate after. So it's kind of this thing, the original Thanksgiving, the idea was literally the celebration of genocide. I don't think that's what Thanksgiving Day has to be a remembrance of today, obviously, but it is something that's really important before we go around saying, oh, the Indians and the pilgrims ate together. Like, they celebrated genocide together because that was their way of surviving at the loss of a lot of life and full tribes being wiped out. George Washington was the one who said that those celebrations should only happen once a year instead of what was going on then, which was basically every time a tribe was wiped out. And then Thanksgiving was made a legal holiday under Lincoln during the Civil War, the day before he ordered troops to march against the Sioux people in South Dakota. So, unfortunately, Thanksgiving is not as hearts and roses as Dr. Mike kind of believes. Paints it to be. Here's the thing that gets me, though, and I just have to talk about this, because so I taught American literature, and in the textbook, they had excerpts of William Bradford's writing. And it always bothered me so much as a teacher, because they would have an excerpt from their first arrival and struggling, and then the next excerpt, they would skip ahead in the book to eating and celebrating together. And literally in the textbook, they would skip over the part where William Bradford wrote about making the bargain to go out and sending the captain out, let no man pass. And that always really bothered me, that, listen, if you're gonna tell the story to our children, to future generations, you need to tell the full story. You can't just pick this half and that half because it's the story they've been told since they were little kids. And so when I was a teacher, I would find online either the rest of the original excerpt, or as I said, I actually would show clips of the History Channel, The Story of Us, season 1, episode 1, because they do a really good job of discussing, like, what was the first Thanksgiving actually in celebration of. So it's just noteworthy that these kind of things that become a part of our knowledge and our childhood understanding of things, we need to do our own research, especially when it comes to history, and not just, yeah, necessarily just believe what we're told, because you might be missing the impact or the cause and effect, which is way more important to remember than to just ignore. Some things come off the back of pretty horrible things, and we shouldn't forget that.
I guess Dr. Mike has done some good convincing, because the Cheyenne do actually ride into town. And Mike explains that cloud dancing will teach the people how to plant crops, how to make sure things grow, what we've mentioned previously. Of course, who other to rebuke this concept first except Jake, who says, you know, we're not that desperate. And I don't know who it is. It's like, oh, I think Lauren's like trying to like...
Lauren turns his nose up at it and then, like, talks down to cloud dancing.
I think he, like, acts like he doesn't speak English in cloud dancing. Like, cloud dancing speaks English and says, like, you don't respect the earth. And Jake, in his anger, dumps all of the food from the baskets.
And threatens them.
Yeah. Dr. Mike is like, they're gonna ruin Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's what she's worried.
Yeah, which I think, you know, Sully has seen history repeat itself too many times and basically knew this was going to happen. I think us as viewers basically know that as well, but...
We'll give her a pass. She's been away for 5 weeks. I guess. She forgot these people can be the worst.
The townspeople are still all digging for water. Horace is persistent that his family genes will help him through this experience. The Reverend wants to pray. Sully explains... These people don't really even understand droughts. And of course, Dr. Mike inserting herself once again, explaining, you know, we need to stick together like the old settlers.
She's read too many books.
Yeah. And Sully is being the realistic one in this scenario, saying, you've tried to reason, you need to let it go, you can't fix everything. He actually yells at her. He probably has yelled at her before, but he says, you know, you can't change people. And she's like, yes, you can. And he's like, another thing we don't agree on. Then Dr. Mike screams,
dun, dun, dun.
Maybe we don't have enough in common at all.
Something you didn't mention that happened in that scene that leads to our next scene is Hank is out. He's not helping anymore. He doesn't care to stay. He's decided he is going to take his girls and himself, and they're going to head to Oregon out of the drought. And of course, a lot of people in the town are trying to talk him out of it. Even Jake kind of guilt trips him and is like, can you do this? And of course, Dr. Mike is all worried about Myra and Horace being split up. Dr. Mike actually straight up offers to buy Myra out of her contract then and there. And then Hank's like, it's not about the money, Michaela. And I'm like, really? We don't understand a lot that Hank does. And so they get on a wagon and they leave.
And Horace is like begging in the distance that he'll, stating that he'll,
I'll come find you.
Come for her.
He's trying to do the Daniel Day-Lewis in Last of the Mohicans. Stay alive. I will find you.
Yes. Except it's not as emotionally dramatic when she's sitting on a wagon going, Horace! Another person thinking about leaving town is Robert E. In the next scene, he's explaining to Grace that he's thinking about selling. He doesn't want to lose everything, but at this point, he has no customers. He's having to give the horses a significant amount of water. And Grace is very upset because she doesn't like the thought of starting over. This is the first real home she's had where she's not considered anything but herself, and leaving would not be easy for her. Robert E. actually says, don't make me leave without you, which is quite the threat for a husband to his wife, but she's pretty adamant that she's staying no matter what he does.
Some of these characters, we look at them, they're like, oh, they're selfish. And then other characters we look at and they're like, oh, they're desperate. They're afraid. In times of crisis, you never know what your choices are going to be until you're faced with it. Robert E. says, I can go start coopering somewhere else. And I was like, what is a cooper? Because we've talked about, oh, Robert E. is the blacksmith and maybe the carpenter. Well, friends, we have an answer to season 1, episode 2. Why does Robert E. work with blacksmithing things but also do all this woodwork? Here is the answer. The answer is coopering. Do you know
which, what by the way, is the sign that stands outside his shop is says coopering.
Well, there you go. So, a cooper is to make repairs or build things, and someone who made things like casks, barrels, and other containers from timber and iron.
He's like a handyman.
We've established he's definitely a handyman, but
He could do that without the need of water in the situation that he does right now. That's your point?
No. My point is that he's not the carpenter and the blacksmith, he's a cooper.
Gotcha.
Because he would still need water to drink.
Yeah, but I think his point was that he does the horses, and even with the blacksmith, putting the things in the water. But there's like a brief snippet of a scene where Dr. Mike and Sully have officially entered the we're not talking phase.
Yeah.
Don't know if you're familiar with it.
But they maintain their prolonged eye contact.
Sad. It's like sad, mad, all the emotions.
Yeah.
It is kind of depressing, though, when he just like walks by, like,
doesn't smile, come over to say hi.
They don't have that much in common, so what are they going to talk about, you know?
Oh my gosh. Oh, something we also didn't mention earlier is that Lauren and Jake are convinced that the Cheyenne must have a secret hidden spring. That's how they're growing those crops and getting that food, which Sully obviously says, no, you're crazy, in an earlier scene, but they didn't believe, and so they find, looks like a little reservoir, and they begin collecting water.
Stealing water.
Well, they kind of think they're stealing, but Cloud Dancing and a few other Cheyenne show up. It's actually pretty funny because the talking down voice that Lauren did to Cloud Dancing earlier, Cloud Dancing does back.
Yeah.
And he's like, the water has sickness. No drinky. But, of course, why would Jake and Lauren believe? They think they're just trying to protect their own water. And so they threaten to shoot them. And so Cloud Dancing says, not my problem.
All yours. All yours. In which they bring it back into town and do what...
They make it worse, right?
They do the selfish, greedy thing, which is sell the water 2 bits a bucket, which is not that much. And, of course, there's people everywhere trying to get in, being pushed away. And eventually, somebody jumps up there and, like, overturns the whole bucket. Smashes the bucket, water's overturned. And Dr. Mike screams, and you have that cinematic moment where everyone stops and turns and looks at her.
Aren't you ashamed of yourselves? Yeah. Listen, it's not cool the way that Jake and Lauren, if it really had been good water, that they, really were, like, stealing. But the fact that then they come to town and are like, hey, we're going to make a living off this water that everyone desperately needs and is going to literally die without. And then the people are fighting over the water. And yeah, like I said, kind of flashback to the epidemic. People are scared, panicked, desperate. And it doesn't bring out the best in anyone, really.
Yeah.
But the guy, like, throws the bucket and it's like this scene where, like, Colleen's like in the way. And Brian's like, Colleen! And then, yeah.
It's dramatic.
Dramatic. And just like, what is happening in this little town? Sully, being a lone wolf, but he makes a wish on a dandelion. We don't know what his wish is. Is it for water? Is it for his true love? Man, they didn't even make it like 2 days after their profession. But
in my opinion, it's because she has distorted reality of what relationships are. Anyway, meanwhile...
People are sick!
People are sick in the clinic. Dr. Mike has established that they have dysentery, which dysentery is, it's kind of a broad term. It's a type of gastroenteritis, gastrostomach, enterocolonitis inflammation, so inflammation. It's the body's inflammatory response. Usually these people have bloody diarrhea, abdominal pain, dehydration, some other things that we won't go too deeply detailed into this podcast, but there's multiple things that can cause this. Most commonly is Shigella, which is a bacteria, but it can be caused by an amoeba, parasites, and it comes from this thing that we've talked about very commonly before when it comes to sanitation. It is contamination of feces in food and water. Then people take in that food or water, and then they become sick and then have all these symptoms, as previously stated. And so... obviously, this is from the contaminated Cheyenne magic water that Jake and Lauren sold to everyone. And of course, Lauren and Jake fess up that it was from this contaminated pond. And I don't remember if it's Lauren or Jake who wants Dr. Mike to help them. I think it's Jake, and she's like, two bits, please, which is very clever.
So satisfying.
Yes.
And they're like, you can't be serious. And then Lauren's like, just pay your check. It's like... And yes. Then we flash back to Sully, who hears thunder.
And there's lightning, too.
Which seems pretty early to give us hope, but yeah.
Come on, we all know how the episode's gonna end.
Back at the homestead, though, the lightning and thunder don't actually bring rain, but they do bring a barn fire.
Fire!
I'm
on fire!
They save the horse.
That's all you care about.
Matthew and Dr. Mike work together to put out the fire. But then she has the moment that she had in the operation where she's like, where the heck were you? Because Sully comes running up and he wasn't far away, but he was not visible. And she's like, you weren't here. And again, I guess
I needed you. I don't need you now. I don't need you ever.
Yeah, she's
a drama queen.
Panicked. She's desperate. She's upset. She's probably emotional because they're not talking. And she feels disappointed in him. And he's like, what was I supposed to do? I didn't know the barn was going to catch on fire.
Yeah, and he literally came as soon as he... She bothers me this episode. I'm sorry. Y'all can come for me. But it's just like, have some realistic expectations. If you want to do this thing where you come to the Wild West and make a name for yourself, and she's learned all these things and done all this stuff, that's great. But then don't be upset at someone when you've become so reliant on them that they can't
meet all your needs.
Every need, every second of every day. Think about all the things he does for them. That just bothers me. But yeah, she's probably emotional, so she needs to have her little drama moment. And of course, Sully, what does Sully do? He goes to his confidant, which is Cloud Dancing, and is like, this is what it's going to be like to be with a woman. And I
something about a hornet's nest.
Because he's used to being alone. And Cloud Dancing says that man and woman are not meant to be alone. But Dr. Mike, she's an awfully strong force of nature.
Something about, is it worth being fenced in for love or something? But shouldn't love set you free? He went to Boston for her. She came back to Colorado Springs for him. Like, they've done the hard part of, like, choosing each other. Now it's just living with that. And, yeah, knowing... they're different, and being okay with that. Cloud Dancing makes a reference to Mother Earth and Father Sky. Obviously, the idea of Mother Earth shows up across a lot of indigenous people's stories and myths and such, but the mention of Father Sky, the only mention I could find on the internet, which I might not have been searching in the right places, was the Mother Earth, Father Sky is related to a Navajo creation story, so... not a Cheyenne tradition. Sometimes it's not good when they just pick and choose and they're like, oh, this is native enough from this tribe, that tribe.
They probably don't expect people to do what you do.
Yeah,
just
but
look it up.
That's the thing. If you're gonna historically represent a specific tribe, you should get it right. But yeah, you know, Cloud Dancing kind of, when Sully feels like his feet are in the air and he doesn't know which direction's up, which direction's down, Cloud Dancing kind of sets him back on his feet and points him in the right direction and then says, okay, it's up to you now.
Back at the clinic, everyone's discussing whether dinner should go on because now not only do they have a drought, but they have people who have bathroom problems. And I don't know who says it, like, oh, I don't know what we'd do without Dr. Mike. But she's determined to make it special and that everyone should bring whatever they can find. We also have Robert E. and Grace kind of
reconciling.
Yeah. They realize the only thing that matters is them being together and alive, which of course is significant because Dr. Mike overhears them. Just having someone to love is enough. So what does she do?
She tracks Sully. She follows his tracks. He's pouting on a log.
He's not pouting, he's contemplating.
He doesn't even have to turn around, but he hears her and he knows. And she's like, I tracked you. And he's like, you were listening, which is a callback to the beginning when she was like, oh, you were listening at my thing. So that right there is a show of compatibility. They do listen to each other, which is very important to avoid miscommunication. They talk about what they do have in common, which is they both care about people. They both care about doing the right thing. They care about the Cooper kids. And she admits what you mentioned, that she has become afraid of how much she's come to depend on him. And he agrees. Yeah, me too. I'm afraid of how much I've come to depend on you. I feel like, especially like if we look back to the operation, this is probably something she has had to learn before. But, like realistic people, we don't learn things once and and get them right every time from then on. And I think the context of just getting back from Boston and having to go back to roughing it and them being new in their relationship and what does that mean? Which, I don't remember which episode it was, you know, where he was like, I want to fix the house up. And she's like, it's too much. Was that Halloween? Yeah. They're communicating.
I think she expresses well when she says, you know, I know where I want us to be. I don't know how we're going to get there. I wish she would have just said that all along because that's the root of all their issues. Things have changed. We know where we want to be. We don't know how to get there.
There's no map. Sally
says, same here. There's no map. We'll just set off without one.
So they go to see the sunset. He takes her to his special place.
Yeah. He said he goes there when he loses his way and he needs to find it again, but he's never taken anyone there, not even Abigail, which obviously holds this big, weighty significance. And yeah, that's about that.
And they're better. Their hearts are better. They're back together.
Oh my gosh.
The town is preparing at Grace's Cafe for a Thanksgiving meal, but it's important to, I would say, quite a few people in the town, the Reverend, Dr. Mike, Robert E., Dorothy, Grace. I think Dorothy drags Lauren along. And so they're about to start eating when?
Cheyenne show up.
With Sully.
Who's got a big old turkey.
That lone wolf. He's bringing him in. Rounded him up. And now they're going to eat him. I don't know how that fits into the metaphor, but... Dr. Mike's like, oh, how did you convince them? Or why did you come? Or something. And Cloud Dancing says, because we know it's right to care for the child, even if the child fights against you. And so it's about being the bigger person and about seeing people in need and not saying, well, if they don't want my help, I'm not going to try anymore, but keep trying, despite the fact that they don't want help, which is pretty inspiring.
So they pray. The Reverend prays. He asks Cloud Dancing to offer up a prayer. They begin to eat together, and sure enough, Hank has been gone like 5 minutes, and comes back with the girls.
And he's learned none of the lessons and experienced none of the things, but he gets the good food.
Well, and it's mostly humorous because they're like, oh, why did you come back? And Hank's like, I lost a wheel, and Robert E.'s like, yeah, I tightened that wheel myself.
Yeah.
And Hank, I think, subtly admits like, oh, I started thinking about the holiday, and... Yeah, he was probably hungry enough to make it worth his while.
I like Lauren actually tells Hank to get over himself when he has to sit down with the Cheyenne at the table because he's going to put up a stink and Lauren's just like, get over yourself and sit down to eat. Which I like. I like it when Lauren's on the good side. Yeah, and then
there's a rumble and there's a drop of rain and then there's a lot of drop of rain. And then Dr. Mike goes into full mom zone where she's like, cover the food, everyone!
Everyone help me, and everyone else is running around and dancing in the rain, and she's like, everyone, the food is getting wet. And then she turns.
I'm not describing it.
And Sully's standing there, smiling in the rain, having his full-on Mr. Darcy in the rain moment. And
then they stare at each other, and then it's over.
Yeah. And they all live happily ever after.
Literally.
Until the next episode. It's a good ending. It's very memorable. I think people like the rain and Sully in the rain. And I think it also shows the difference between them two, right? Like, she's very practical. Oh, we gotta make a plan. And he's just like, hey.
It's raining.
Just enjoy it. Just enjoy it. Favorite scene?
Probably when the Cheyenne and Sully show up to the feast and everybody's happy and excited. Yours?
I don't know if it's my favorite scene, but, like, my favorite moment is definitely when the Reverend asks Cloud Dancing to pray as well. Because that's a big step for him and for the town and, like, acknowledging differences and living in community. I like that moment.
Cool.
What else do we do at the end?
Rank. I'm not sure this is, like, super high for me, to be honest. It's fine.
Incident, The Race, Sanctuary, Halloween, Saving Souls. Definitely better than Saving Souls. Probably better than Halloween. Sanctuary is the Dorothy episode. Do you think it's better than... I kind of like it better than Sanctuary. I think I don't like it better than The Race.
Yeah, I like The Race a lot. That's fine. We could go.
So the new number four. Because part one and two. Okay, yeah. So new number four for episode two, but...
Season two, sorry.
Which would put it somewhere between 11 and 13. Portraits, The Prisoner.
I like both of those better.
Better?
Yeah.
All right. So this will be the new number 14 on our list.
Master so, list. Are you fine with that?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm fine with that. Nice.
Sweet.
Next episode, we will be talking about season 2, episode 9 is, drumroll,
Best Friends.
Sweetheart Dance causes trouble between Dr. Mike and Sully. Of course. Of course. Looking forward to it.
Thanks for your patience in making this episode happen. It has been a joy to sit here and look at the palm trees in the ocean and record this with my sister.
In the flesh. I can touch her.
Ow. Our next one will not be in person, but we look forward to getting to recap the next episode with you guys. So don't forget to send in your lessons regarding this episode.
We'll see you in the next one.
Bye.
Bye.
Peace. I'm out.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Not a Lady, a Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you might also enjoy visiting our website, www.notaladypodcast.weebly.com. There, you will find important resources and content related to Not a Lady Podcast. You can also write to us with lessons or comments on our Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook pages, or by sending an email to notaladypodcast@gmail.com. You can support our podcast by liking and sharing our content on social media. Don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss our next episode.